Any questions?
Just a quick question. My understanding was, the B'nai Korach, since Moshe abandoned with Zerubbabel, they didn't go against it. They didn't join their father, because they didn't go against the Rebbe. Is that true? So they weren't, that's why they weren't, one of the reasons they
were saved. Yeah. Hello, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We are today faced with so much calumny against Jews and against Israel. I wonder what will happen in England if an extreme group of Jews who want to burn up the Quran. Would the police permit it? Would the government not ban it? Or if a certain group would go up and they would burn the New Testament? I'm quite sure that the British Parliament would never allow it to happen. So when the Jews, they come and they say, well, we're running up the Talmud. It's interesting that it's this week's parsha, Zot Chukata Torah, that there's a certain chukah means gezerah. Gezerah oraita. In the year 1242, it was on this parsha that they burnt the Talmud in Paris, in which there are many lamentations, some of which we recite on Tisha B'Av. This parsha of the week. And this is indeed the parsha of the week. Because the planning of Shabbos afterwards. So the Pasha of Bolok. But we know Bolok and Bilam to curse the people of Israel. So it's unbelievable this should happen in England. But what's happening altogether? That the world, most of the nations, unfortunately, are accepting the lies of those who believe, unfortunately, in the blasphemy of murder, cruel killings, not just of the Jews, but of innocent human beings. And this is spreading far and wide, and especially the enormous threats of the suicide bombers and their faith and what they're doing. There was another headline today that this group of Daesh, apparently they've managed to conquer that area where there was the supposed grave, and they had their monument for the prophet Jonah. Prophet Jonah, he called for the penitence of the sin city of ancient times, and they repented. And this is really the message that's needed today. I mean, all the sin cities all over the world who believe in killings and other obscenities. So we're faced with all these terrible troubles. But despite this, we have to be thankful that the Nazi beast, we hope, at least he was controlled, although now it's coming forward again in so many different forms. I think we go back to the concept that really all these matters are described in the prophets. So, the prophetic teachings concerned the birth pangs of the Mashiach. And ultimately everything depends upon us, the Jewish people, according to the prophets. Whatever's happening in the world depends on us. So I think we have followed certain part of the description of the Desler in the blackest years, the darkest years of World War against the Nazis. He was in England, and we know there were mass killings, unfortunately. I'm going to continue where we left off. If anybody wants to follow the Hebrew, and also maybe keep the sheep, you might one day, people might want to ask you, they haven't asked you already, how do you explain the Holocaust? Before we continue, you have any questions or comments? If not, we'll continue here on page Kuf Mem, that's all we follow inside. The middle of the page. V'od yoter gedula hashtut. He's here referring here to the question, how can one explain that God, who chosen the people of Israel, allowed a third of our nation to be exterminated in such an extremely cruel fashion? It's a big question. So, at the beginning of this page, Abdesla says, we have to recognize that this is part of the birth pangs which become almost unbearable to some women before the moment of the rebirth. And he gave the to recap, he gave the comparison that it can happen a person in very dangerous illness in which he is likely to die very soon. So Hashem is the divine doctor, divine surgeon, and he makes very painful operations, which is so painful that the patient says, please end my life. But the doctor says, you regret it afterwards because the operation will save your life. So you just have to bear the pain. And we human beings are more limited. We don't understand the greatness of the operations that are needed in order to produce a new era for mankind. Then he said, "What you tell the last truth, even more great, is the foolish approach. How can a person, with his small intelligence, recognize the justice of God?" So also, it's not easy to test. I mean, I've generally speaking said this was the final test of Avraham Avinu, the Akedah, and I think the truest significance of the Akedah, if you analyze it sentence by sentence, is connected with Yitzchak, who was born to Avraham and Sarah in a miraculous manner. In other words, it's a joke that he could have been born. Of course, Abraham and Sarah loved him exceedingly more than any other human being in the world. For they knew from him would be descended the greatest people, and all the blessings given to Avram would become fulfilled. And now he was asked to reduce him to ashes. And the way the Akedah Yitzchak is hinted at already in the Tanakh and described in the oral traditions, that the greatest merit of the people of Israel is to remember the ashes of Yitzchak in the altar. It weren't the ashes of Yitzchak really, the ashes of the lamb which came in place of Yitzchak. But what do you mean the ashes of Yitzchak? It's the crematorium of the Jewish people. But also many people thought the Jewish people is finished and God has left the world. No longer there. Because it's his people. So it proves, I still remember, on Tisha B'Av, I have quite frequently been invited to speak in the auditorium about the Holocaust, about Tisha B'Av. So I still recollect questioners. I would still questions. And of course my main theme was not where was God, but where was man. Explained all in a deeper manner. That life is not only this earth, many different aspects. And there was a couple who asked more questions than anybody else. And one of their comments was also, doesn't the Holocaust prove that the Jews are not the chosen people of God? And shouldn't therefore the Jews think that maybe there's another religion who are the true representatives of God on earth? But I answered it openly. The officer went up to them and said, "No, what's the base of your questions?" After I gave up different answers. It turned out they were here on a mission, Christians, to go and try and persuade the Jews to become Christians. But I still remember I gave them then a personal talk, the few people around, at the end of the talk, and I said to them, "You know, you come in with a group to try to finish the unfinished work of Hitler, because that's what you're doing. Not enough. Leave us alone. Go to Africa," I said. "Go to the Africans who worship idols," and some of them also, there are different groups, also believe in wounding themselves or their gods. Go and do your missionary work there. Leave the Jews alone. Unfortunately, that's what's happening here. The Christians, they make use of this. Constantly. So, we do not understand, but if we follow the prophets, we do understand. As we'll see. What the Odessa did in the middle of the war, when his family, he didn't know if they were alive or dead, some of them, but one of his sons, he managed to get to America. This is the letter from the darkest days of the Blitz. Tammuz, 1941. So it says like this. We've got, isn't it wrong for us Jews who do live with the Tanakh and with our Tfilot, shouldn't we take notice of many different verses in the Tanakh to teach us? And the light to turn up, you've got Jews and Bible, to turn to chapter 92, Tehillim, which is on page 772. And these verses we say regularly on Shabbat, but this is Mishmor Sheli on Shabbat. How great are your works. Godlu Masef Hashem. And how deep are your intentions and thoughts? Ish ba lo yedo. A brutish man doesn't know, nor does a fool understand this. When the wicked spring up like grass, when all the workers of iniquity flourish, why is it done? It is that they should be destroyed forever. So, Magod l'maseach Hashem. This is a reference to his story. That means what is happening in the world of the plan of Hashem. And the plans, the machshavot, shakurish boruchu, are very deep. How can the human being with his limited mind go and ask questions against Hashem? That's why David HaMelech says, Ish ba'ar, do yidah. Now Ish ba'ar, leba'er means to consume. A fire that consumes, or food that is consumed. I would even say today we live in a consumer society. Every person, every group wants to consume as much as possible of all the material wealth of the world. Whether it's food, whether it's pleasure, whether it's power, whether it's territory, it's all ish ba'a, human beings. That's why an animal is also called a bi'iro, shilachet bi'iro, but animals, they consume. An animal, they eat to live and live to eat. So a man also has an animal nature. It's an animal inside him. And there's some ish ba'ar means the person identifies himself with the concept of consuming. And because he looks at the world materially, he does not understand the nature of the human being, the true nature. It's true, part of the human being is like part of the animal world. And the truth is that the subconscious development of evolution being such a strong power in trying to explain in the academic world the so-called progress of human beings is based primarily upon the Ishba, because they look at the world and at life from a materialistic angle. But we're told at the beginning of the Bible, man was created, it's true, he's created from minerals, just like the animals are. Certain minerals make up the human body, biochemical aspects of the human being are similar to biochemical aspects of the mammals and even lower grades of life that are found. But that's just part of the human being. They're ignoring the divine image. The divine image, human being, which is divine and can remain forever. But for whom can it remain forever? Potentially every human being is given it. But if it's not developed, and instead the animalistic passions, they are the rulers, and they suppress the spiritual quality of the human being, then it doesn't continue. Because in the spiritual world, that's the whole concept of being brought into the physical world, into a body. So that when you're in the body, and you pervade the body with spiritual power, and channel all the physical instincts to become ways to strengthen the spiritual power of the human being, then that remains. That's the concept of simply speaking. When there's the phrase used so frequently in the Tanakh, when a person sins too much, v'nichrata ha-nefesh ahi, then that nefesh is cut off. That means there's a cut off. And that's exactly what it says here in the Pasuk. Look at it carefully. Ish ba'lo yeda is a reference to the consumer personality. Ukasilo, even a kasil, is someone who follows arrogance. Kasil is a bit different. Because it is someone who says, my personality is fantastic and great. He says it inside himself. Ksil is connected with a person, like a person puts his hands on his loins and he says, you know, I am the master of my destiny. And therefore, the divine image disappears. When he thinks, like, you might even say, Ishvara, Ksil, the two major schools of modern psychology are the school of Freud, and pseudo-Freudians, and the school of Adler, the pseudo. So, because Freud claims that the major instinct of human beings is the libido. The libido is a reference primarily to the pursuit of pleasure. It includes pleasure food, it includes pleasure for sex. He says all other pleasures people search are primarily upon, let's call it, instinct for procreation. That's what it's there for. Why does Hashem give us a strong sexual urge? So that we'll be able to not be so self-centered that we only think of ourselves. My career, I don't care, I'm not bothered about having children. It happens today as well. It's in the homo society and so on. The main thing is pleasure, not children. So pleasure. Pleasure takes over. However, the instinct was given to us for a particular purpose. That's the libido concept. Taiva. Adler says, no, there's a greater power, which is the instinct for self-preservation. Put in myself as being the true God. There's no God above me. I decide what is correct and what is. This is the self-centered individual who worships his own ego. People who, in their speech and in their writings, constantly say, I, me, and myself, unholy trinity. And that's it. That's the concept of developer Adler, of the inferiority complex, which leads people, what's this inferiority complex come from? Because the person thinks he's superior. And therefore he gets very upset that there are others who do better than he does. All his life he's pursuing ways to get everybody to accept his own personality as the master. That's it. That's Ksilu Evinator. Both those types of subconscious powers and sometimes conscious powers of the libido and the ego, which is stronger. This is the difference between these two schools of modern psychology, with the developments of pseudo-Freudianism and pseudo-Adlerianism, which goes into other different branches of present-day psychological points of view, not based upon the religious and moral personality. Therefore, they're people who follow this in practice, they won't understand this, because their eyes are blinded. That before, what don't they understand? The next verse, when you see the most wicked people have the greatest success, how can God allow that? How can allow God today that these people of Desh and the people of Iran, with their wickedness, and they've already murdered hundreds of thousands of people. Most of them were murdered from their other Muslims who don't agree with one another. Semi-Muslims, which ones go to. So, they're so successful, they've taken over, and today they've been taking over the United Nations. They're the ones who make investigations according to their concepts. And they're all based on wickedness. To go make a comparison with the political point of view of Hamas and the political point of view of Israel, as they're doing, even the more lenient ones who are ready to investigate a little bit what Hamas did, but they've got a different concept. Hamas, they put the people who are attacking, they put them in hospitals and ambulances, and they have the guard of women and children, and behind them are those who shoot the missiles. And the Israeli army did its very best and even lost quite a lot of lives because they refused to target any innocent person. And how many lives have been lost on our side also? Because the army is very particular, you're not allowed to shoot and so on. I know. Now, for instance, we've had a student in the yeshiva. We had a student here at the yeshiva who was on the reserve duty on Mount of Olives, and he had to identify if there's any terrorists around. And a certain person, he asked, please, you show me your identity card, what you're doing here. And the person took out a gun and was going to shoot him. And what did he do? So he took out his gun, he was on duty, and he shot him and killed him. Because he was about to kill him, and he killed him. So what happened? He was court-martialed by the Israeli army, and he had to be in prison for 3 years. And that's happening all the time. Some people in Miluim, they tell me what the person was on Miluim, one of the students of the yeshiva, was an army duty. My children also in the army, they know the war. So he said, they asked him, it happened already before with him, they asked him to go into one of the Arab villages where you get a few hundred of the Arabs with slings, and some of them with knives, and they're threatening a jeep of the army who've got guns. They're given the command, you're not allowed, you can only shoot to the ground and hit their feet. Yeah? If they come and attack you. There have been plenty of instances where they all get together, there's only one or two people in the army jeep, and here they've got a few hundred, and they come with a sling. No, if you do anything further, you'll be court-martialed. So he said, what should you do? Should you accept the order or not? Good question. So it's a very, very difficult situation. And the army goes and as far as possible to be lenient with the Palestinians. And yet when it comes to make a doch, notice the doch came out, they want to bring an attack in the International Court of Hague against Israel. And against the Palestinians, no. And otherwise, there's no honesty left either. It's a very serious situation. But we should know that all those who follow such policies, Hashem gives them the ability to carry on in their manner. So how could Hashem allow it? That's our question. So David HaMelech says, we should know, Lehi Sham Dom Adayad. All these people, they will not have a life in the world to come. They're given prosperity? Because some of them have done good deeds. For the good deeds that they've done, they're given prosperity in this world. But afterwards, their soul is cut off from their people. That means the soul doesn't continue to live. Whilst we say, the souls of the righteous live forever. And the truth is, today, it's become a fact. Because people who have had so many near-death experiences, they see the life there is far greater than the life here. Because they're near to God, they're near to God, they're able to come back. They're surrounded by love on such a high level that you can't have in this world. At the same time, they know what's going on in this world. So this is also the shorash, the root of the concept after the time of the redemption, they'll be revived with the dead. So let's go back to the words of Rav Dessler here. It says, then it goes on, Tzadik HaTama Yifra. The Tzadik, he'll be like the date tree. Fruits will come at the end. They keep on coming again and again. They're not like the grass that withers away. These are the examples brought in this chapter 92 of Tehillim. So, the foolish person doesn't understand this. And he thinks that Hashem also doesn't understand it. He thinks he's clever enough to understand the same level as God. This is the greatest folly. And from that folly come all the questions. The great saints who feel the strength of spiritual life, they understand this. So we'll go on to the next paragraph. The purpose of the suffering, which we do know, is that we should learn from it. Because the success of the divine operation depends on this. If we learn from it to become better, to improve ourselves, then the operation will be successful. There are so many Holocaust survivors who went through terrible experiences, but they learned from it. Not only the great saints, but even others, like for example Viktor Frankl, who was a Freudian psychologist before, and as a result of the terrible suffering he saw, he understood the concept of the divine image, and therefore produced a new school of psychology, which is based upon spiritual teachings, the search for meaning in the world, which is Drisha Vashem. Look at his, not only because his first work is most important, Search for Meaning, Logotherapy, but his later work, The Unconscious God, is a description of the power of the divine image in man. And only when people understand that, it will go deep. It's very much in Jewish tradition. In fact, in his second work, The Unconscious God, so I wrote him an email in which I pointed out and gave him some of the sources that his analysis of the nature of the human being, that the most powerful passion within the human being is the unconscious God, is the way in which the Maharal of Prague developed the Tzelem Elokim. So, got the email back, letter back from him. He claimed even descended from the Maharal of Prague. I was very pleased to hear this. I think they'd probably try to get his books in English. So this is a deeper understanding. So therefore, the essence of suffering is why does this come? So there are many verses in the prophets that describe how the Jewish people, we were born in suffering in Egypt, the birth of the nation, and our suffering accompanied us in our long history, the history of suffering. Okay? And this, what is the purpose of it? So, if you look at, now he quotes here the passage, you see a passage from Jeremiah. Look in the second chapter of Yirmiyahu, which you find on page 543. So if you look at verse 29, Lama tarivu elai, why do you Jews argue with me? And you say to me, why should we suffer? And Yirmiyahu, we should know, the 10 tribes already disappeared. A great suffering for the whole nation. And now the remaining tribes, they knew quite well that they were step by step they were exiled to Babylon, and their temple is going to be destroyed. And you contend with this. So they say, how can you God? You are our God, and we are your people, and therefore you argue with me. So Hashem says, Kulchem Peshatem, all of you have transgressed against me. Lashobi Kate Benechem, I have smitten your children with no results. Otherwise you're my children. And you're so wicked I had to smite you. But didn't help. Says what the Musa Loy Lokhu. He did not take any notice of the Musa, of the correction I gave him, to change yourselves. And therefore, Ochlov Chavachem, your own sword has consumed you. Your prophets, like a destroying lion. Have I been in the wilderness, he said, in the darkness? Why do my people say, we are free, we will come no more to you? So this is the purpose of suffering, is to take notice of rebukes. And the suffering comes upon us, is Hashem is hitting us to wake us up. The longer to live your life, you ask some questions on me, better learn out from all the suffering, and then you'll be able to come back. So this is the real purpose. See, because the compassion of Hashem is without limit. Ridach mimenu nidach. He will not allow any individual to be cast off. He doesn't allow him to fall. Someone is falling. If a person will only carefully see the salvation of Hashem, at least this should, he should learn from the suffering. How much he has to thank Hashem for being saved. For being saved from such terrible suffering. So if a person doesn't express gratitude to Hashem, then he's a person without values. So therefore we at least have to prepare ourselves. When we see the salvation from the suffering, we should know the redemption then will be great. But this is the only purpose that can remain with the small human being, that he's looking forward to the redemption. I'm now over the page. That's what David HaMelech says. This is from Tehillim, chapter 118, verse 21. Which goes, most of you know, we say it in Hallel constantly, but we'll sing it. Now one answer, one explanation of this phrase is, I thank Hashem because He answered me. It's been my salvation. But a deeper explanation, Anisoni, is Milashon Inui. It's more in accordance with the word to afflict. That's the Beyukit, Tanuet Nafshot Techem, affliction. I thank Hashem that you've given me suffering. I thank you for the terrible suffering you gave me. Because from the suffering you brought the great redemption. This is the major purpose of suffering. That when we are saved from it, as those who now speak and ask the questions, just ask the question, being saved from the suffering, we should at least look forward and hope for the redemption coming. And in fact, that is already redemption. Because the deeper the suffering, the greater should become the recognition of the redemption. And that's our fault, that we don't sufficiently recognize this. Some of the great saints recognized it. People who've been through the Holocaust in a very difficult fashion recognize it. Others don't recognize enough. I mean, if my parents would not have left Frankfurt. Some 2 years before the war, who knows what would have happened. My uncle had a synagogue in Frankfurt. He came to visit us in London. I think it was shortly after Kristallnacht. So we said, stay here, don't go back. You know what happened to England in Kristallnacht when the synagogue was burnt down? Don't go back. He said, I cannot leave my congregation. As long as that congregation is still there, I have to look after them, help them. There's always one who helped anyone in need. So he went back. And he was killed by the Nazis. So so he's a great Messiah of Nefesh, and we helped many people to escape, but he himself will not escape. As long as he had help, people who couldn't manage on their own to get out of the Gehenna. So those of us who were able to get out, we've got to recognize how much we owe to Hashem. And that's why we've got to dedicate ourselves to save everyone else. In fact, I explained in this manner the difficult statement of the Rambam and also the difficult name of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam says, every person can be a saint like Moshe Rabbeinu. If we learn it, the source for it is a pick of obvious, as we saw last week, explaining. The daughter of Paro, who saved him from drowning in the Nile, also in a way of divine providence on a high level, so she said, since I was able to save you, that's why I'm calling you a Moshe. But Moshe is, from the root to draw out, is the one who draws out. But his name should have been in the passive, if you learned enough in the Ulpan. Not in the causative. Mashal means to draw out. Moshe means someone who draws people out from trouble or from the water. So if you want to say a person who was drawn out, like Moshe was, his name should be Mashui, which is the Pu'al form, or a Nifal form, the passive, Nimsha. He was drawn out. So why was his name Moshe? Can you tell me the reason? What's the reason?
He drew Israel out of Egypt. He drew Israel out of Egypt. So
well, he was only a baby. She gave him the name when he's a baby.
Drawn out of the water.
Huh?
Drawn out of the water.
Oh, he was drawn out, so it should have been called Nimshai, the child that was drawn out.
Okay, so
Mashui, why is it called Moshe?
He drew out the Israelites from Egypt.
That was much later, 8 years later.
His name was part of his destiny.
Huh?
His name?
The daughter of Paro, and she believed in Hashem, there are even Egyptian sources for this famous princess who believed in one God. And she became Gioret, you know, high level, described in Divrei Yamin. So, she recognized Hashem wanted her to raise Moshe, and she was able to save him from the waters. And said, your destiny is to save others. And the Chumash doesn't tell us the long history of Moshe Rabbeinu, what happened to him all the time. What's it? Just mentions four episodes where he saved others. He saved the Hebrew from wicked Egyptian taskmaster. Then when two Hebrew slaves were arguing and one was going to hit the other and maybe even kill him or something, so he stopped from killing. He saved the fellow Hebrew. Next he saved the daughters of Midian from the cruel shepherds. And next he saved one of the sheep that got lost in his flock that he was looking after. So then Hashem said to him, okay, you're saving others. So now I want you to save my people. That's when Hashem appeared to him, but that was 8 years later almost. But and what happened on the day, in fact, if you work it out, I've said this before, so maybe you can, I'm not going to ask, I'll just tell you it, that on the same day that Moshe Rabbeinu was discovered by the daughter of Paro, it was the day when the Torah was given 8 years later. On that same day, on Shavuot, On the 6th of Sivan, the daughter of Para saved the baby Moshe. So it was a destiny. And on the, when Moshe Rabbeinu was the Shliach of Hashem at the time of giving of the Torah, Mount Har Sinai, I mean, that saved the world. And that's the thing, that's the mat that can save the world today as well, the Tekelon. So he saved mankind from drowning in evil waters. It could drown the whole of mankind. It's never been more actual than today. And that's what's called Moshe. So, but the Rambam says every person has to be entitled to Moshe Rabbeinu. We've got to recognize we're all survivors. Certainly all survivors. Yeah. The non-Jews who become Geret Tzedek are certainly survivors. You say their souls also through the mountain of Sinai. And they have rejected the lower levels of the service of Hashem, the nation of the world, but they become true servants of Hashem. And Jews who've been, so many of our parents, grandparents assimilated, and we managed to be saved from assimilation. So that's also the fact we're here in the yeshiva. Is saving us. And even people, so hundreds and thousands of Jews have been saved from all attempts to destroy us. It's continuing until the present day. So this is Orach HaKyanitani. We've got to recognize that more suffering we've been saved from, the more we have to dedicate our life to save others. Because we have all got to look ourselves survivors. As a survivor, let's dedicate ourselves to let others survive from physical dangers, from poverty, from starvation, and even more so from spiritual starvation. So, if you look at those verses that follow, then it's a reference to the mission of our generation. Questions?
Did you also say that it was his destiny that when she pulled him out of the water that she also made him a prince?
With what?
The same destiny when she gave him his name, she also at that moment made him a prince. You know, she made him a prince. She brought him into the kingdom, which kind of gave him the background, even though he had a cleft tongue. Yeah. He was still raised to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was part of the preparation for leadership. He could reach such a high level of leadership more easily and feel a certain way of dealing with an alien society and even opposing society. It made it easier for him to fulfill his mission. Although he was a bad speaker.
Yeah, he had a cleft tongue.
Yeah, I said when I came to my synagogue, it would never have got a position in the major synagogues of England. Moses would have applied.